Well, Trent, there's certainly been a lot of chatter online lately, and it seems like more and more of it, when it comes to the whole area of animal welfare and or animal rights, which seem to connotate two different things in people's minds, and maybe they should. But, you know, I know you're very involved in helping stand up for the rights of American farmers who are very good stewards, not only of their land, but their animals as well. Tell me just kind of a little bit about your perspective on some of the things you've seen of late and how you think that's, or why that's important for farmers and the consuming public to kind of get a better understanding of what's going on.
Well, thanks, Chuck, for the opportunity to visit with you. And there has been a lot of chatter, although it's interesting the chatter's not really new. I started working on this about 9 years ago, and 9 years ago I found some pretty extreme thinking folks that believe animals should have the right to vote. And as foreign as that sounds to most of us that have been in animal agriculture, we have people that are thinking about marrying their dog. And all of that is fine, I guess. I mean, it doesn't fall in line the thinking with my religious views, but at the same point in time, we need to recognize that that segment of the population is growing. That segment of the population does not believe that animal welfare in any way, shape, or form includes death, respectful harvest, and the consumption of those animals. So I think it's very important for us to clearly define animal welfare and animal rights. I have not met anyone in animal agriculture that does not believe in proper animal welfare, that we should provide, it's our moral and ethical obligation to provide protection from predators, protection from the environment, adequate feed and water on a daily basis. That, to me, is the definition of three parameters that go into proper animal welfare. And then at the end of that animal's life, we respectfully harvest the animal so that we get food, fiber, pharmaceuticals, and fuel, the essentials of life for mankind. We have known about it in animal agriculture as the cycle of life, and there are people that believe we need to move down the food chain, if you'll let me use that expression, that we no longer should consume animals. I've spoken to a lot of animal rights kids in universities. There's animal rights clubs in every land-grant institution. You name a land-grant institution which has got a tremendous block and bridle program and all of the wonderful ag groups that we have. They also have animal rights clubs. And they are correlating enslaving animals, animals on farms that are owned by me and other individuals in animal agriculture, as no different than the slaves and the treatment that plantation owners had pre-Civil War in the United States. So it's very important for us to come to the realization that this is a growing segment of people, that some of those individuals, I call them militant. We're not going to change their views, but it's important that we explain to other people the purpose of animals, period, before these militant vegans grab the reins and tell them that we no longer need to eat these animals. We even had a professor at the University of Texas, El Paso, who was teaching a class that modern-day animal agriculture is modern-day slavery, that there is no difference between the ownership of a slave and the ownership of a pig, chicken, a cow, or a goat.
Well, I know that I run into some people increasingly more. I've kind of gotten involved in speaking out publicly through some of our web platforms on this subject that wonder, why should we really kind of pay attention since their views are or seem so extreme? And the more I've learned, and it looks like there's certainly evidence to this as we look at Proposition 2, which was passed in California, is just one example. This kind of thinking is like some other areas of culture and society. We're kind of moving towards in little steps. It's not something that's going to just come in and happen all at once. But as those groups and their views become more allowed and put into places like our educational institutions and others, it seems like we have a chipping away at what really you might say are some of our human rights.
Funny you would bring that up, Chuck. We are told that we study history so we don't repeat it. And yet, evidently, the world is cyclical because we continue to repeat history. 1939, the first government to enact a law stating that dogs and horses should have protection under the law was Nazi Germany. Nazi Germany was the first government that made vivisection, the use of mice and rats in research projects to cure human disease, illegal. They eliminated all testing and research on rodents. The leader, Adolf Hitler, was a vegetarian. He did not eat meat, neither did Mussolini, two of the most known dictators of recent history. And both of those dictators did something else along the lines when their vegetarianism, they believed that animals need protection under the law. They both created the endangered, Hitler created the Endangered Species Act to protect animals and killed 6 million Jews. If you can understand how you can give all of this legal protection to an animal and then take a human life, you need to explain it to me. But we have the same exact thing taking place today, and you've been involved in some of the internet chatter that happened on my Facebook in the last few weeks. It is an anti-human movement. Yeah. It truly is that we as humans, I went to a humanist conference once, and the humanist of this country, there's a group that belong to this humanist movement, and they believe that mankind is destroying the planet and that we are the devil. We need to bring back front and center the importance of human life and the importance of the resources that we're in charge of, so that those of us in agriculture can continue to convert those resources into human consumable products that improves human life.
Well, I certainly don't didn't intend for our discussion to get into a sanctity of life discussion here, but I do essentially believe that we have in this country, we have devalued human life to a point at which things like what we're talking about are now becoming more acceptable and more politically correct and all those words that I absolutely get sick of hearing. But but not getting that far down the discussion, getting back onto just animal rights and welfare, and what's that's meaning to the American farmer today, we are facing increasing regulations, you know, laws, and of course the interpretation of those laws. And for this reason, it's really a good time for, whether you're a farmer or a farm group or a company involved in agriculture in some way, to speak out and get good information out there. And I dare say, like we had here at this conference, an announcement about this, trying to take this AgriAware program global, which is teaching young children about farming. Sounds like a pretty darn good idea right now to me that we should see more of.
And it's not only of interest to farmers, it's of interest to people who eat. Because that's the bottom line. We need to convert natural resources into human consumable products. We don't see many gardens and backyards today. And what you and I are passionate about is that food remains on store shelves that is produced domestically. We made that mistake in energy. In 1979, we built the last oil refinery that we have built in the United States. We said, "You Saudi Arabia, you're good at it. We'll let you deal with the environmental implications. We'll just buy the gas." And now we realize that was a mistake, and yet we're making the same mistake with food production. In 2007, for the first time in the history of this country, we imported more food than we exported. And the trend is going away from domestic food production. It's ironic that a state like California can implement a law, the largest populous state in this nation, 30 million people, put a law in place banning modern facilities, cages for a hen. And now they're talking about not only banning them in the state, but anybody who sells an egg in the state, those hens must not be in cages either, which means, it does not mean hens will be out of the cage. We had a University of California Davis study that said you're not going to change how the hens are housed. You're going to change where the hens are housed. So if we have a law put into place that says we can no longer have a hen in a cage to sell in California, they're not going to be in cages in Iowa. They're not going to be in cages in Ohio. They're going to be in cages in South America, Mexico, China.
And those countries aren't going to be helping pay our whole bailout plan that we've got, which is a whole other discussion. But
how many kids need to die from melamine-tainted dairy products in China before we realize that we don't need to rely on other countries for our food? We do it better than anybody else with safer, a higher degree of quality, and more reasonably priced food here than anywhere else, and yet we continue to enact these unnecessary, frivolous laws that's doing nothing other than increasing our dependence on foreign nations for food.
Well, I want to touch before we go here, because we probably both have other things we got to move on to here at this Alltech Symposium, and that is we had this recent H1N1 virus, which unfortunately got branded very quickly in early swine flu. And that has had an impact and probably will continue to have an impact on a segment of the ag industry that encompasses more than just people who raise hogs, because people have to feed them. Well, so that's affecting them if we have less of the animal production. So you got a real ripple effect that kind of happens from something like this. To help show support for them, you've initiated a little contest that I think is pretty cool called Pork on a Fork. And why don't you just describe it to me?
Well, actually, you're the inspiration for Pork on a Fork, whether you want to take credit for it or not. You posted a picture of some, I believe they were America's Cuts, if I remember correctly, center pork loin that you were grilling one Sunday afternoon. I thought, man, that's a great idea. We happened to have had a bone-in ham in the oven at the time. I took a picture of my girls, put it on the web because I'm trying to outdo Chuck. And then it hit me. Why don't I let everybody try to outdo Chuck? I should have named it Outdo Chuck.
We could. It sounds like a restaurant, maybe.
But then I'd be getting Chuck roast in the pictures of Chuck roast. Anyway, well, wait a minute. I'm not sure we know what a Chuck roast is anymore.
That's right.
But back to the contest. I am encouraging people to send me photos through May 26th, the weekend, to the Tuesday after Memorial Day weekend. And this is kind of a fun, a new addition. I'm going to select the top six. There'll be a committee of us that will select the top six photos. They're going to be placed on NTV's website, my local ABC TV affiliate. And they're going to suggest the viewers go to their website and pick the best photo. The best photo to you might be different than the best photo to me. But if we use a random sampling of people, I think that'll be a lot of fun.
More fair.
Absolutely, more fair. And we're getting the TV involved and telling the positive story of pork production, because there is a positive story on the benefit of pork. You know, one thing that was just perfect timing is Bon Appetit magazine. Last week, or this month's issue, came out with a report that said there are 10 foods that were once considered bad for you. Now we consider them superfoods. Number one on the list, bacon. Who doesn't love bacon? And everybody was afraid that, oh man, I shouldn't be eating bacon. Well, guess what? The fat in bacon is equivalent to the fat in olive oil. And it is has tremendous antioxidant properties. It's an omega-3. It's a health food. Fat is an essential nutrient, consumed in the proper amount and the right kind of fat. Dr. Nathan Bryant from the University of Texas, the Biomedical Research Center in Houston, has just released some new studies that are just phenomenal about nitrates that come in bacons and cured hams. They prevent cardiovascular disease. They promote cardiovascular health. I didn't know that when a person has a heart attack, for therapy purposes, they inject nitrates right in the heart. We've been eating them in bacon, and so now we've got this new story. Bacon is a health food. We just need to tell the world. And so we're telling the world about the positive aspects of consuming pork products through a tremendous contest called Pork on a Fork. Facesofag.com, you can get the details. Agwire.com continues to keep everything updated. And the winner is going to receive an all-expense-paid trip for two to the World Pork Expo in Des Moines, Iowa. Now, who wouldn't want to go to Des Moines?
Well, especially when you've got the barbecue lossal contest, which I did have the honor to judge one year. And, you know, they told me you got to be very careful and only small samples, because you got a long day ahead of you of sampling various cuts and all the different entries. I left there with a little goodie bag and had some supper later on afterwards.
Only did it one year. They said, don't get that Zimmerman guy back. He broke us.
but seriously, I think it's a good program. It'll be very interesting to see the entries. We've already got, I know, a number of them that have been submitted that you're putting into a Flickr photo album. So we'll point to that and just kind of stay in touch and of course, announce the winner when that happens. So I think it's a great idea. There's a lot of things that those of us, whether we're in the media or our farmers themselves now, can do to help get the word out on things like this. So I encourage anybody to do that. Again, you said facesofag.com. That's where you can point people to and do that in whatever manner you can. Let's see what kind of competition we can get established here.
Absolutely. I've got some neat stuff coming from the West Coast. I've got a group of chefs that are having their own little competition. And that's what I really wanted to do, was get beyond. It's easy for farmers to send in pictures. but I want the chefs and the retailers. And I've got a lot of poultry producers, egg producers, who understand the importance of a good piece of bacon with eggs every morning for breakfast.
Well, you know, I mean, we may, if depending on how this goes, let's keep in mind we may want to change the name a little bit, but I could see a contest for where you wind up at Poultry Expo or maybe the NCBA convention or, you know.
See, there you are trying to one-up me again. Already. Didn't even over and you're trying to one-up me again.
All right. Well, that's Trent Luce. We're here at the All-Tech Symposium where we've had the opportunity to visit. Good to catch up with you and see all the things that you're doing because, you know, I think there's some of us that have been in very traditional media that are doing some things now that we probably couldn't do 10 years ago. Start
Absolutely.
With the technology didn't exist, for one thing. So I applaud everything you guys are doing. Look forward to staying in touch on this project. I'm Chuck Zimmerman.